98.5 Sunshine FM. How did the number of Christians in the world grow from as few as 25,000 100 years after Christ's death up to 20 million in AD 310? How did the Chinese underground church grow from 2 million to over 100 million in 60 years despite considerable opposition? These are some of the tough questions that Alan Hirsch tackles in his new book, The Forgotten Ways. He's on the line now to discuss what he's found and how those findings could affect the contemporary Western church. Alan Hirsch, welcome to 98.5 Sunshine FM.
Hi, Rodney. How you doing?
Good. Alan, your previous book, The Shaping of Things to Come, co-authored with Michael Frost, asked a lot of questions and it pointed us in a general direction of what missional church could look like. Does The Forgotten Way seek to give us a few more of the answers about the direction of the church?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a good follow-up book. In shaping with Mike, we were probing probably more the kind of outer parameters of our thinking, and it's more a book that addresses some of the shifts in worldview or in our thinking about church and mission that need to take place. This book kind of assumes that ground, repeats it, because I think it's a standalone, but it builds upon it. And I think if I could characterize it, I would say that the two books complement each other. This is much more certain about our direction, where shaping is just more a probing book. With some hints about the way I think we should go forward for the church in the West. That's the particular focus both books take.
What I really did like about The Shaping of Things to Come is that it didn't sit down and say, this is the way to do it, because we've had so many of those books in the past.
Yep.
And we've found that they left us wanting more because it doesn't quite answer the question.
Yeah, we have a welter of how-to books, particularly predominating from America, which many of them are very helpful, but I think we need to think missionally, we need to think very differently about ourselves before we even get to models.
I guess a lot of us have heard of what is termed the emerging church, and I know that your work seems to be associated with the emerging church, but I guess we've got to be very careful when we use phrases like that, because that can mean very different things to different people, can't it?
It does, and in fact, in let's say the three major Western contexts, say in Europe, It's a different thing again to America. It's very distinct in America. Here it has a very nuanced and quite different to the other settings. They've got some commonalities, of course, but we find the phrase actually now singularly unhelpful. We're tending to drop it ourselves. Or when we use it, Rodney, we use it with the term missional attached to it. Because that's kind of what we're more on about, is like the church becoming a missionary agency and thinking like missionaries in our own context.
I guess it's difficult for us in the Western world to start thinking in a missional context here at home, because we are so used to having a Christian background or a Christian heritage, and we don't see the fact that the person living next door to us is living in a completely different culture to us.
Yeah, and often an entirely different worldview, and sometimes from what we know in our multicultural West, I know multicultural Australia, I mean, you have a tremendous amount of subcultures around the place. Our feeling is that you've got to almost think it's like we're in subcultural Papua New Guinea. I'll give you an example of that. I sat down with some friends, this would be about good 8 years ago, and these guys were really astute observers of youth culture, and we defined what we meant by subculture sociologically. You know, it's a language, it's kind of clothing, forms, music, da-da-da. And then, so we were looking at youth subcultures alone. And within an hour, we'd come up with 50 different youth subcultures. And you began to realize, actually, that there's so many different tribes that hang out now in Western contexts.
When we, I guess, grew up in Australia, we thought everyone was fairly similar to us, and then we started seeing different cultures arriving. And, you know, it's sometimes easier to just say, hey, let's make everyone like us. But that's never going to cut it, is it?
No. And the fact is, actually, we're much closer to what it was like in the early church when we actually are engaging as missionaries to our culture. When we settled down to an assumption that the church was part of society, that it had a certain central position and a certain privileged kind of status within society, I think we became less ourselves than we ought to have been. So in actual fact, the situation of being in a missionary context now forces us to think more authentically about ourselves.
I know that some people would accuse you of just saying, all I want to do is overturn the current church structure and change to something completely new. But really, you're saying something quite different, aren't you?
Yeah, no, I think definitely in the forgotten ways. I can understand how shaping could have been read that way, even though we didn't intend that. It's kind of, we wrote the book for church planters and missionaries already, you see. There was no book like it. And we didn't honestly think it would be taken that seriously by, you know, the broader church. So it can be read as a little bit of a revolutionary text. But I would say the forgotten ways, hopefully that's been rounded off and matured. And my assumption in the book, actually, why it's even named The Forgotten Ways, is that actually every church and every authentic Christian has within them all the latent potential to actually create massive movements, that it's all within us and it's already in the church. It needs to be activated. So, in actual fact, it's a very positive view of the local church. What drives me, Rodney, is simply the feeling that unless we adopt new forms, we're going to lose our ground. The prevailing understanding of church at best is only reaching about 12% of our population. We need to think very differently or be irresponsible with the gospel.
Let's look back at those first questions that we began with. When we talk about the number of Christians in the world growing from 25,000, just 100 years after Jesus was killed and then rose again, up to 20 million just a couple of hundred years later. And mm-hmm. again, looking in the current context of the Chinese underground church growing from 2 million mm-hmm. to over 100 million in 60 years. I mean, mm-hmm. we would love to see that sort of growth in the Western world. Why are we not seeing it?
That's, I suppose, what the book is trying to address. But I think if I had to try to pin down perhaps the central kind of core of what I think we've discovered, and it was like a discovery, by the way, is that I think we have tied our understanding of the church, that is, being God's people, to the what I call the institution of the church, that is, its buildings, its governance, its clergy, or its professionalization of ministry, the services, etc., the worship, the liturgies, all the inherited forms. That's exactly, it's actually bound our idea of church up with that. What China teaches us is that that's all taken out. The church in its institutional form is utterly obliterated, literally within years of Mao Zedong coming to power. And it certainly was a sustained persecution over many years. And all those forms are removed from them. So they don't have their buildings, they don't have their clergy, their theologians, their missionaries, they have none of that. And they discover something in themselves. They discover the idea of church removed from the external forms of it. And they actually discover themselves in the process. That's the most remarkable thing. And what they unleash there is a force that actually grows, as you mentioned, from 2 million at the time of Mao Zedong's revolution, 200 plus million now, and that's the present kind of estimation. I mean, that is quite remarkable, without anything that we normally associate with church. I find that a very provocative story.
Well, even in the early church, we see that the church was persecuted, and I mm-hmm. guess we forget that. We forget that in those first centuries, the church was very much persecuted and was an underground movement, and we're certainly not that today, are we?
No, if anything, we're quite static. And again, we assume that the church has a right to a certain privileged status within society. And this, by the way, we got when Constantine came in, which is the early 4th century. This idea of church being central and having a privileged status only comes in then. It was never our early form, our primitive form of church. And so I think we need to move away from assuming that the church is an institution and discovering ourselves as an organic movement again. I mean, I think that's what the heart of the book is to try and awaken missional imagination around movements.
How are we going to change the way we do things to see that being affected?
Well, again, I mean, there's a number of ways one can approach that, but I think one of the things we try and cultivate in our work for Forge Mission Training Network, one of the things we're quite strong on is believing that we first have to engage in mission before we articulate what the church is like. Now, what I mean by that is that we get involved in among a group of people. You don't start with a model of church and then try and impose it upon a people. What you do is rather go among a group of people and act like a missionary. That is, you've got to learn their language, observe how they gather, where they gather, you know, what makes them tick, what are the existential issues they're dealing with. We've got to become missionaries again. The missional church is like taking Jesus to the people rather than the people to Jesus. We bring Jesus to where people are at, or we take the church to the people rather than bring people to church. One of the most pathetic things I've seen, actually two of these in the last 6 months. One was an Australian church. It was an Anglican church that was so desperate about the kind of plight of numbers that it was offering boxes of chocolates. It had advertised that if you come to church, you get a box of chocolates. And the other one was in America, they were offering a Harley Davidson to people who could bring the most people to the seeker-sensitive Sunday evangelistic night. And it seems to me that, you know, this is quite a manipulative attempt to try and kind of bolster up what we call the attractional church. Yeah, I think that we need to become missionaries again. Actually, the word for mission, of course, you probably know, the Latin word is translated English, it means sent. And we need to become a sent people again.
If what we're relying on is getting a Harley Davidson or people coming along and getting chocolates, we're trying to add something to the gospel to make it an attractive thing rather than just telling people what Jesus came to do.
That's right. And we find that Jesus actually has got a lot of currency in popular culture, and most people are quite willing to have a good discussion about spirituality and God. What they struggle with is the church. And this is research in any of the Western settings indicates a phenomenon that is called Jesus yes, church no. So we find that this is very much true of my experience in a tough kind of inner city kind of area in Melbourne. I find that people are quite happy to talk about Jesus and what he means and the meaning of his life, as long as you give them space to disagree. And spirituality and God are big issues, but they don't want to go to church in its current form.
What are some of the ways that you've seen effective in actually reaching out and going into the community with the gospel?
Well, one of the most exciting churches is people actually redeeming their pleasures, so that you've got people in sports groups and sports teams. One of our exciting kind of ventures has been a thing called Church on the Pine in Queensland, where a guy started with a speedboat and they were skiing, and you know, started with two or three mates coming down, and they would just start with Sunday morning, they'd go skiing the whole day, eventually ending up with about 80 or 90 adults and kids on the side of the Pine River doing church on the Pine River. I've seen examples of it in drama theatre and all that kind of things, where people are engaging in drama group doing Jesus Christ Superstar. And something happened at a critical point that sparked a whole lot of questioning about who Jesus was. And the people there, they couldn't take them to church anyway because the people didn't want to go to church. So they actually started a church actually among the drama group. I can't mention where they are because they want to remain nameless. But they've done probably three or four churches in among people who would normally never go to church. And I think that's very, very exciting.
We've got to be careful. If we're not careful, we can turn it into just getting together with a bunch of mates and doing stuff. There has to be an intentionality about what we're doing, doesn't there?
Yes, absolutely. And we go there as ambassadors of Jesus. We recognize that that's who we are. We bring that into the equation. That's just part of the deal. You know, it's not just about just ditching church as we know it. I mean, that would be too cheap. But it's trying to kind of reinvent church into the 21st century in ways that are meaningful for people. People are not lining up to come to church. Church needs to change in its expression.
I'm talking to Alan Hirsch about his new book, The Forgotten Ways. Alan, who do you see will be reading this book? Is this purely for people in church leadership, or is this for everyone to look at?
Forgotten Ways will appeal most to people in leadership. It's been written in a way that I think is concentrated, and people who are not, who are interested in issues of missional church and mission, etc., who are not so-called professionals, will access it. But I do think its appeal would be best for leadership. The shaping of things to come probably would be more appealing to a broader audience.
We're mainly looking at leadership, but everyone's going to have a go at reading it by the sounds. And also, if people want a bit of an overview as well, I guess there is still the shaping of things to come that they can look at.
And I would say my partner Mike, his book Exiles, which I think you're aware of, would also be a very good book to read. That's much more taking it from a local perspective of trying to nail down what missional living looks like.
Yes, I'm looking forward to catching up with Mike here in the next couple of weeks and talking about that book too.
Good.
But Alan, it's been fantastic talking to you just a little bit about The Forgotten Ways. I suggest that if people want to find out more, that they get a hold of the book. It's well worth reading. And thank you for your time today.
Okay, thank you very much.